And we're here.
Hello, hello. This is Sustainable Binghamton Radio.
On 90.5 WHRW Binghamton.
I'm Zach.
And I'm Hadassah.
And today we're going to be talking to Mr. John Patterson. He's the owner of Southern Tier Green Consulting. Thanks for being here, John.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Hadassah.
And we are going to be discussing his business, his work, and the issue of energy. And how we can better use it. So thanks for being here again.
Thank you very much for having me.
I guess we should just should we jump in with some announcements? What do we have for him today, Hadassah?
I think we should just start with getting to know him better.
We just
met, and we've been corresponding over email. So so let's start with just kind of who you are, kind of a little personal background, and then
Maybe you could tell us about your work and where you're from, your work before you started your own business.
That goes back a long way.
I'm ready.
I'm originally from Owego.
Okay.
And moved to Binghamton about 8 years ago when I got married to a lovely woman, Cecily O'Neill.
If she's listening.
Shout out.
She should be.
Shout okay. out.
And she's very much into this environmental, save our planet like I am.
Cool.
And
great.
I think this is very, very important. I didn't know up until about 4 years ago what the word sustainability meant. Really didn't understand it.
That's fair. I think a lot of people
I think
are in
most
that boat.
People don't.
Yeah. And what has happened is we bought an old house. I kind of was getting out of retirement of the mortgage business and real estate development business. She saw an ad in the paper at Broome Community College and said, you know, this course ought to be interesting called Energy Savings. Hmm. And I took it.
Do they still offer it?
They offer it, yes. And the sad part is it's not well attended.
Hmm.
Right.
NYSERDA, and a lot of people don't know who NYSERDA is, but paid for 75% of the course.
Really?
It's not a long course. It's like 10 days. But it really woke me up to how we can save money and save energy in our home, in our workplaces. And what I found for myself, this is something, is a passion. I really enjoy learning and doing and helping people do this. I took the business on not as a contractor, but as a consultant. I found that there was a big need. There are some contractors in this area that do this work.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group called Weatherization. That's a nonprofit group that does this. And when I asked, can I get an energy audit done at my home? They said, sure, if you're low income. And by the way, there's a 3-year waiting list.
Right.
Right.
And I said, wow, this is a niche market. This is a niche business.
Mm-hmm.
So it really fascinated me. I took the course. I had an energy audit done on my house.
Mm.
And my wife and I bought the house. We put a brand new furnace in. We had insulated. We had done a lot of nice stuff, put the old storm windows back on.
All the stuff they kind of talk about.
All the big stuff, yes.
They often give tax rebates or some sort of, you know,
yes.
for this type of washing
and,
machine or that.
I found my house was a big sieve for cold air coming in and hot air going out. So we hopped right on it and started doing what they call weatherization. That is the caulking, the sealing of the place so that the cold air doesn't come in, the hot air doesn't go out. And I tracked my energy bills from the very beginning and look back. I can't give you an exact dollar what it saved me, but I would say it saved me 35% to 40% on my energy bill.
Wow.
And we didn't spend thousands. We spent a few hundred dollars to do this. So I feel that's a – I got
huge
the back
difference.
The money within the first heating year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And so this is kind of a mission, I feel. If I can help people and show people – how to do this stuff themselves, simple things themselves. Now, again, I have done a lot for senior citizens, and some of them are not maybe capable of doing this. And that's okay, because maybe they have a handyman that can do things.
Right.
But at least I can, my report, I can tell the handyman what to do and how to do it, because in my reports, I give a lot of pictures and simple explanations of what type of materials to use to make the house more energy efficient.
So, could you talk about a couple of examples? So you mentioned caulking. So that's is there anything that comes off to mind that maybe
in your dorm
you could do?
Yes, there's caulk comes in two separate forms. One I call what they call painter's caulk. It comes in a tube and mm-hmm. you put it on and seal cracks, and that's a good material. It's easy to use. Most stuff is very inexpensive, $2, $3 a tube.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's
right.
Inexpensive. The other material out there is called rope caulk. And obviously, it's rope caulk. It took me a long time to try to find it at the major hardware stores. And that is like a clay type material. It comes in a ribbon, and you just peel it off, and it's palatable. You can put it in between the cracks of your window frames, around between your windows,
right.
All these little cracks. What's nice about it, your hands don't get dirty using it. You can get it in different colors. And if you don't like it, you can peel it back, put it back in a plastic bag, and reuse it again next year.
Hmm.
And it's not, again, it's not expensive. A very large roll cost about $7 or $8.
Okay.
And that would probably do 4 or 5 windows.
Wow. So, right, and that sounds like something someone in a dorm could use, because you can't really do permanent stuff.
Oh, a dorm or an apartment.
Or,
certainly.
Yeah, an apartment where you don't have control over.
Mm-hmm. Sealing all those little cracks around the windows, where the windows come together, mm-hmm. under the windows, it really does save a lot.
Is that available at like local hardware stores, this rope caulk?
I have found it at Home Depot, Lowe's. Some of the larger hardware stores,
all
yes.
Right. Very good. That's really good for our listeners. I know a lot of people would be interested in that.
Yeah.
It's a nice product, and again, it's easy to use. It doesn't get your hands
right.
dirty. And
yeah.
Right.
So you've been doing this for how many years have you been in this business now, this consulting?
It's been approximately a little over 2.5 years now.
Wow. Does it keep you very busy, or?
Well, be honest, no, it doesn't.
Right.
It keeps me busy exploring new products,
right.
exploring who's doing it,
mm-hmm.
Just really keeping up on top of all the different aspects of materials, who's doing what, making appearances to different things. The other day, I spent some time at the BOCES class for weatherization to help
right.
the kids understand what's weatherization all about.
It seems like we're kind of, there's a little bit of a knowledge deficit we're kind of catching up on. I think as people are educated on these issues and become more aware of how easy and how important it is to save energy, I think, you know, the business
yeah,
end of things catch up.
I think it's been a cultural shift away from thriftiness and those types of values that I think maybe some of the older persons still maintain, but I think it's coming back.
I think so.
I think it's cool.
Absolutely.
I think the philosophy has been is I pay utility bills no matter what they are, because that's the normal way of doing things.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And when I coined a phrase, and it's been used before, there's something wrong when your utility bill is higher than your mortgage payment or your rent payment.
Yeah.
And believe me, I see that. So
yeah.
Wait a minute. Something's out of balance here. And it doesn't have to be.
Right.
So I mean, obviously, I don't want you to have to give away trade secrets here on the
air.
There's
no trade secrets.
I would love for you to take us through like an ordinary home or an example home where things you see. You walk in the front door. I mean, what do you tell these people?
Well, I could do that for you.
Yeah.
I
okay.
really could. And let me put a plug in if you don't mind.
Please plug away.
Not for me. I'm also sit on the board of Habitat Humanities.
Okay.
And we have a house we just finished renovating. And I think with the permission of Amy, the director, we could take you two through that. And I could point out a lot of things. Be happy to do that.
Sure.
That would be
wonderful.
Really cool.
What about in the air? Like when you go into someone's house, or maybe you've gone in someone's house recently, what are some of the things you see?
Every house has a new discovery.
Set of issues.
It really does. And that's what makes it exciting for me. Mm-hmm. What I do is I start from the outside of the house. And I use an infrared camera, what they call thermography.
Mm-hmm.
And I take pictures to see what is happening on the outside. Now, you know, when it's a day like today, it's very hard because the inside of the house and the outside of the house are pretty mallet. So that's hard to do. But when it gets cold and it gets around 40 degrees, then if I look at a house and I look under the roof, a picture of the roof, and I see 70 degrees under that roof, then I know heat is coming up through the attic and out, mm-hmm. or along the basement windows. I see heat coming up. Then when I go inside, it's just the reverse, naturally, because the attic should be about the same temperature as the outside. So if the attic is a lot warmer or there's heat coming up through the attic, I know that's where you're losing the energy. And I can see that with an infrared camera. And on my website, if people want to go there, if I can tell them, it's sogreengo.com. Mm-hmm. And I have pictures of my infrared pictures on there showing some stuff. And I'm still developing the website, so it's not a big it's done, but there's a lot of work to be done.
Okay.
But there are pictures, and there are some explanations on what's thermography, what I'm doing, what are we looking for. So the website is great for information purposes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll probably have you give that out again before we sign off, definitely.
Yeah. So, that's the outside.
So when I'm in the house, first thing I do is sit down with the owner, and I always ask him, let me look at your energy bills, because I want to analyze what is going on here.
That makes sense.
And there's two parts to the energy bill, and most people don't really look at them. The first part is, of course, the dollars, and we're all concerned about the dollars. But what makes the dollars is the usage.
Right.
So I'm looking at what is the usage for this size house, the construction, and how many people are looking at living in this house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the dollars can be very false because there are energy supply companies out there, and some of them are charging outrageous high dollars for buying energy.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really emphasize people should look at their energy bills and see if they've been signed up with any of these energy supply companies. Some of them are great, and some of them maybe a lot higher than you want to really pay.
Right.
And that's what I really do. Sit down, look at them, and see where am I starting from?
Yeah.
All right. And on your energy bill, of course, it gives a whole year's bar graph as to what you've been paying, not what you've been paying, but what you've been using for the last 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives me a very good idea. When I see, for example, I did one home, and I saw a real high peak in February. I mean, four times what it normally should be.
Okay.
So I'm saying there's something wrong here.
Something happened.
Something's happening here. I don't know what. And so I'm trying to discover what and inquiring what did you do? Yeah.
I've seen high
gas bills in summertime, and I say, do you have a gas heater for your swimming pool? And they'll say yes. Oh, okay, that explains it.
Right.
Why? What's going on here? And then my object is to bring that to them, help them understand how to read their bills, and how to analyze it themselves. Go through the house. I take a lot of pictures, both thermal camera pictures and regular pictures. When I give them back the results, they've got something there that they can work at themselves, and then they can start tracking their own bills and see what happens. And if they want to call me back and have questions, I'm happy to answer questions about.
Yeah, what's going on. You mentioned before the show that you're really interested in one of the key components of your mission is helping people help themselves.
Yes, Jack.
Which seems like a really sustainable idea.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, not for you as a business, but for for people.
Well, again, I'm not a contractor, so I'm not trying to sell them insulation or windows.
Right.
I'm trying to sell them
knowledge.
More comfortable home.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
One of the things I ask people is, in the wintertime, is it very dry in your home? Do your clothes have a lot of static? Do you feel your throat is scratchy?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that shouldn't be.
Why is that?
Because we live in a house. In the wintertime, you've got that house closed up. The windows are down, the doors are shut, and you're living in it from 6 o'clock to 6 o'clock, 12 hours. Just your bodies alone give off a lot of moisture, a lot of moisture. Now, then you're cooking, and you're taking showers, and you're washing and brushing teeth and all this, so that adds a lot more moisture. Well, then where is that moisture going? It shouldn't.
I know where it's going in my house. My mom runs the dehumidifier, even when it's dry.
Well,
yikes.
Well, a dehumidifier, when it's that's something wrong. What is happening?
Something's wrong with her.
Well, what is happening is this. Moisture is absorbed by warm air. The warmer the air, the more moisture is absorbed. So when you have a leaking house, cold air is coming in, forcing the hot air out. The cold air is dry. So you're pushing all that hot, moisture out. Some of the books I've read tell me this, that four people, the moisture of four people living in a house in 8 hours is 4.4 pints of water. That's a lot of water in 8 hours.
No.
That's just your body. That's not got to do with the showers, the cooking.
Right.
So again, where's all that moisture going? That's going out through your attic, out through your windows, your doors. And then that cold air is coming right in to replace it, which is really, you know, 10, 20%. Your moisture in your house should be around 40% in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And if some people tell me it's 20, then that's why you're getting the sore throats.
Yeah. What about the different types of heating? You know, there's forced air, there's hot water, gas. Do those tend to dry out the air differently?
Well, your hot air, naturally, because it's the movement of air, will dry you out more than the other ones.
So radiant
heat, like hot air, hot water, or steam, naturally will maintain a little better. But again, it's what's really happening, the dynamics of the house. Your house has to breathe. It can't be too tight, all right? Your house has to breathe, and most older homes, 80, 100 years old.
Can you explain that concept a little bit better?
House has to breathe?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you have to have a certain amount of exchange of air, fresh air, mm-hmm. in your home all the time mm-hmm. in order to be a healthy home.
Okay.
We talked about if a house is too cold or too dry, if it's too moist, what's going to happen? It's like living
mildew.
In a sauna. Mildew. Things rot. Bacteria growth. You're breathing. You know, so there's got to be a balance. And I would say most older homes that we have in the southern tier that are 80, 100 years old have got so many cracks and little holes in their woodwork and doors and attics and so forth that I'm not too worried about them being super tight. I mean,
right.
There is a they would have to take a lot of extreme to make them really super tight. And, mm-hmm. you know, a good insulation man can do that.
Right.
But I would say most of them are not in that condition. Now, some of your newer homes, and again, I'm on the Board of Habitat. We just built a new home. And we made that a LEED house. So we had to add an air exchanger in there to bring in more air to make it so it would balance.
I know what LEED certification is. Did you guys get like the bronze, silver, gold?
We didn't get anything.
Just certification.
We didn't get anything.
Okay.
Because we found out that
costs money.
The cost big bucks, and we're Habitat. We don't have the money for a piece of paper.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need
but
the award.
You can follow the guidelines without getting the.
To be honest.
Well, the architects designed it, and we mm-hmm. followed the architect's design, so we felt that's fine. What's that piece of paper going to do? We're not owning it. We're giving it to somebody else. Hopefully, I think they did get some of the tax breaks that go along with us.
Right. Oh, we should mention at this point, though, just because people might not know what LEED, LEED certification is. It's leadership and what is it, energy efficiency design or something?
Correct.
And
Zach. Woo.
Yeah, it's a, yeah, right. Oh, whew. But it's a... It's definitely kind of they're kind of leading the way with some of this efficiency designing and these kinds of things. In some ways, you know, it's in my opinion. I don't know, maybe John, you can speak to this. But in some ways, I'm a little skeptical of them because it does seem like it's become a little bit corporatized and it's kind of like the green movement's been taken over a little bit and like let's get the sticker put on so we can get patted on the back and move on with business as usual.
That happens in all industry.
Right.
Yes. It's very interesting. I was at a conference last week, and a gentleman talked about building a completely sustainability commercial building. And, I mean, he got all the certificates right on through, and that was very fascinating. They have their own waste septic system, mm-hmm. and that is operated by solar energy. And
wow.
and they use recycled materials, things out of older commercial buildings to build this place. Part of the best, highest certificate you could get was they had to use local contractors within 200 miles or local materials or recycled materials to build this building. It's a commercial building.
Mm-hmm.
And
was that here in town?
No, it's in Rye, New York, which is
okay.
called the Omega Institute. And people may want to look that up. It's
yeah.
really, really neat. There are a lot of websites out there that have a lot of information. NYSERDA has a fantastic website. It's a lot of information. You may have to weed through what you're looking for. If you go on there and type in thermal energy, for an example, you'll get a lot of websites. If you just do energy, there's a lot of companies out there. I know the insulation man here in this area, Pat Dunnan, has a great website who has a lot of information. And again, there's a lot of information out there. You can check on these websites. There's books at Home Depot and Lowe's you can pick up for, you know, less than $20 to read and see what you can do yourselves. Yeah. It's just you have to take the energy and spend a little money to find out how to do this.
Yeah, spend a little energy to save a little bit of energy.
Well, yeah, you're right. There's it to me, it doesn't make sense. It's just not the energy, the dollars. It's the carbon effect. Mm-hmm. It's our health in our homes. You know, do we want to spend $400 on an energy bill, or do we want to spend $150? The choice is yours, basically.
Right. Yeah.
And I know when I looked at what was happening in my home, I bet the previous owner, or if I'd bought it and not put the new furnace in and not done the insulation, would probably have been between $400 or $500 a month. And my highest bill last year was less than $180. Again, the choice is yours.
Exactly.
And as my father said, once you've insulated, you've insulated. It's not like you got to keep going back and doing over and over and over again. And there's new materials that keep coming out all the time. That one product that I don't like, I'm not saying it's the worst product in the world, but it has it has its place, is fiberglass. If you're going to use fiberglass, please wear a mask. Please wear rubber gloves, long sleeve shirts.
It's bad for your lungs, right?
It's very bad.
Very bad.
And you should use a mask when you're working around it.
Right. That's.
Is that a common insulator?
Oh, it's been used for years and years. You can buy it. You can buy it. And again, it's inexpensive. It's a good insulator. But to me, it has a health hazard problem that we've just recognized.
Right. And especially if you're doing it yourself, you want to be very careful.
Be very careful.
What about some of these historic buildings and homes around here? Have you been inside any of these and kind of thought through what some of the implications would be for, you know, renovating a home or a building downtown that's over 100 years old? Is that even possible to update those?
Certainly. That becomes a challenge.
Right.
Because it's not only the historic aspect of the home, you want to keep the ambiance of the historic aspect. And that's a lot of people are very conscious of that. There are ways to do things, and so you're keeping the exterior of the home still looking in its original condition. Yes, there's it takes a little engineering, a little thought process, but some good contractors can really come up with some ideas how to do this.
Okay, that's good. That's good news, I'm sure, because I know. I foresee, you know, Binghamton having to do a lot of that, you know, in the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
I hope we see
exactly
we do them even sooner.
Well, the new products coming out on the market, every day there's some new ideas. I just saw in a magazine, and I did a website check on it. A gentleman in California has just is selling and perfected solar tiles that look like the tiles, roofing tiles. So they could be put right on your roof. You wouldn't even know they got solar panels there.
Wow. That's incredible. I never really thought about that whole like aesthetic.
Yeah, aesthetic aspect is
aspect of it.
So, it and again, they're finding markets. They're finding ideas, and people are picking up with it. Sustainability. This conference I went to last week, as I said, there's a gentleman in Kingston, New York, that makes cinder blocks and brick tiles, bricks, I should say, and I think it's 60% of the material he uses is recycled glass.
Wow. Yeah.
Again, there's so many things coming alive because people are really getting on the bandwagon and looking at this stuff.
And
to me, it's fantastic. Thinking. It's great. There's thinking and say, oh,
it's very
I got
fun.
An idea. I got a niche here. Let's run with it and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
it's
they build upon each other.
Yes. Yeah. One person will help each other. That's why I find in this industry is it's not competitive. People are helping each other out because we're all believing this one thing is save our planet.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Should we maybe do this little station identification and then take a quick break?
Yeah.
It's almost to the top of the hour.
Yeah. So well, we should do your announcement before you.
Yes, please.
Well, there's two. As in, again, I give you my website is sogrengo.com. There is a small public announcement I'd like to make, if you don't mind. It's got nothing to do with this. There will be a small ceremony for Veterans Day, Armistice Day, the day to end all wars, November 11th at 11 o'clock at the First Congregational Church in Binghamton. It starts at 11 o'clock, and I believe there's a parade at 2 o'clock in the city of Binghamton, and I just encourage people to come on down.
If they're interested, they
can. Come on down, and there'll be a free lunch. And it was the marking of the day to end all wars back in World War I. So look where we've come from there.
Yeah. Are you a veteran?
I am a veteran.
Of which war?
I was in the Vietnam.
Vietnam.
Not over there, but I was in the Vietnam times.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, very good. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
This is John Patterson.
Thanks for being so involved in the community.
Thank you for your time and opportunity.
Habitat for Humanity, Veterans for Peace. What else are you involved
That's
in?
That's true. Yeah. You got some credentials.
I am BPI certified, by the way. That's the certification I wanted to get to do this work.
Yeah.
Cool. So we've been speaking to John Patterson of Southern Tier Green Consulting. He's the owner, and he does a very good job, so don't be afraid to contact that email. I guess we're going to go. This is WHRW 90.5.
One more announcement before we go. John is actually scooting off to go to the BRISC Roundtable on Energy Conservation, which is happening right now. So it's if you want to go to that, you know, you can turn your radio off. I'll deal.
We guess, yeah.
We'll deal if you're heading off to that.
Excused.
Excused absence from Sustainable Binghamton Radio. So that's going on from 6 to 8, and that's in the library, correct?
Yes, the Broome public County. Library in Broome County.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's going to be all sorts of different energy experts that are going to be there and concerned citizens and such. So if you're interested in getting involved, talking to experts, brainstorming, sharing your ideas, that's going on tonight from 6 to 8. Now for some music. And we're back.
Hello. This is WHRW-FM 90.5. We're back with our friends Isaac and Dave of Binghamton Environmental fame.
Hello, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
So they're a student group. It's not SA chartered, but I think it's recently organized, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And you both founded it?
Us and a few other people.
Okay, cool. What is Binghamton Environmental? Is there a charter? Is there a...
What does Binghamton Environmental mean to you?
Yeah.
Binghamton Environmental is a coalition of different student groups, different students on campus, various students on campus as well as faculty, all just pushing for environmental action. A lot of different groups on campus have been fragmented in the past, so this is sort of a call so that all the different groups on campus can get together and say, hey, so what are we working on? What can we collaborate on? Mm-hmm. It's also an opportunity to work with faculty, work with the community on issues that are affecting us farther than the campus borders.
Can you just throw out some names of some student groups that are involved or
fall under the BE umbrella?
Yeah.
We have Campus Climate Challenge for one, mm-hmm. As well as EMOSAC, the Student Action Collective.
SEEK is or members of SEEK are involved as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And also SUNY Vines, a new group on campus, are all involved, as well as NIRAD, a community organization that's been working with our group.
Great. So that's Binghamton Environmental. What types of topics do you guys work on, or are you starting with?
Right now we're focusing a lot of energy and time into educating people about the process of drilling for gas called hydrofracking.
Okay.
We've been putting forth quite some time into that.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Dave?
Yeah. That's been our main focus. I mean, this group came about because we saw that various groups on campus had a lot of different focuses at the time, and we thought that it would be great to sort of bring all of our efforts together and put this as our main focus, because we saw that it wasn't Pennsylvania. It is in Pennsylvania, 15 miles from our campus.
Yeah.
It's, they're drilling already. So we wanted to make sure that...
And BU's leased. Yeah, I mean...
Binghamton University has leased 563 acres of land to Chesapeake
Energy.
Energy.
Yeah.
And that's in Union, Town of
that's
Union.
It's in Union. We actually visited the land. It's a very... It's an interesting plot because it's right next to a neighborhood.
Mm. Yeah, it's right on a mountain. It's a beautiful, beautiful plot of land that the university sees as
dollar signs.
Yeah, dollar signs, a place to extract resources. They've already used it for logging, and they plan on using it for drilling, solely for the purposes of making money off of this piece of land.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
So I understand you have a big event coming up.
That's very true. We actually have been able recently to get the documentary Gasland with director Josh Fox on campus. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm
Go BE.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, good job.
Director Josh Fox and Gasland are coming to campus Monday, November 1st.
That's this Monday, 7 o'clock.
To the Anderson Center, completely free event, free pizza at 6 p.m., doors open at 6:30.
Wait, so the pizza's before the doors open?
You have to eat pizza to get in.
Exactly, it's a requirement.
Pizza in the hallway outside the auditorium.
Right. But
yeah, in addition to those speakers, we also have Tony Ingrafia, professor from Cornell. Yeah. Top scientist on the process of hydrofracking.
Yeah, yeah, he's fantastic.
He basically did his PhD in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he's been researching how rocks fracture for...
Since the 70s.
30 years.
Yeah,
yeah,
long
he's
time.
Very... He's an intelligent man. I learned a lot last time he came and spoke. We also I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
We've got a couple other panel members as well who are yet to be determined.
Actually, I'm pretty sure at this point that Wes Gillingham from the Catskill Mountain Keeper will be there. It's looking like at this point, we just heard from the Hinchey campaign about an hour ago. And it's looking like Congressman Maurice Hinchey will be in attendance at our event. So
that's news to me. I'm pretty excited about
that. Yeah, we just heard. So he'll be coming to check out the movie, and it's looking good.
We're hoping to really pack the Anderson Center. So we would suggest to everyone who's interested in this at all, and even if you're not, let's say hypothetically, you just like pizza and comfortable chairs.
Yeah,
and good entertainment and. Good people us.
And Monday nights kind of make me depressed anyways.
Exactly. This sounds like a perfect opportunity to get out.
And it's a Sundance Award winning film, correct? Mm-hmm.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So if you like good films, even if you're not yet interested in the topic.
Mm-hmm. Pretty pictures.
You know, it is an award winning film. So even if you want to see it from the cinematic perspective.
Sure, absolutely.
That is... also relevant. So you said you got started because you didn't feel like things were united enough to get things done. How was that process?
Yeah,
people are listening and they're like, I really want to start, you know, people doing stuff.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest things that I saw personally was a community acting on this issue. But there was, for some reason, there was a divide between the community and the campus. No one on the campus knew about this issue.
Right.
And that was really the first place we started focusing is on the community. We got involved in NIRAD, and they sort of like taught us what we needed to know about this issue. Getting on their listserv is very important. So I think in order to really get into these issues, it's extremely important to see what people are saying in the community about these issues and to work with them so that we can then take that and use it on our campus to then educate students. To get in contact with big names like Mark Ruffalo and to get him to talk to students who have no idea what this process is. They don't know what it is, but they hear Mark Ruffalo, they've seen him in movies, and he lives on a plot of land where he was asked to lease it. And he looked into this, and he's being personally affected. We are going to be personally affected if we don't do anything. And that's really why. That's why we need to get this together. And that's pretty much how it went about. Contacting students, talking to different student groups, and just putting out messages that we're doing this, and if you want to be involved, just get involved. Contact us. Let us know.
I think that's the key. Like, if anyone's looking to start something, you just have to go. Just do it. Just go.
Let it all hang out.
Why are you sitting listening to the radio? Just go organize. Get
out
there.
It's not going to start otherwise.
Right. Yeah.
So let's see what else. So how'd you two both first learn about hydrofracking?
Yeah, well, me, I actually was probably last January. I had a friend that's going to school up in Ithaca. It was over winter break, and he just started talking about it. He's like, hydrofracking, have you heard of this? I'm like, no. He's like, you know that video where the guy lights his water on fire? I'm like, haven't seen it. So we went back to his apartment, and we checked it out, and I was just like, wait, what? Like, this is happening right near us? How can this possibly be happening? And no one's heard about it. Even people that are taking environmental science classes, they're still not informed as much as they should be about this issue. That was really what struck me, and seeing that big no frack sign, it's like, that's a cool sign. What's that about?
Yeah. I guess for me, I found out about it, I think, from a professor here, Dr. Knapp. He's an environmental philosophy professor. He's really good.
Environmental philosophy. I don't think I've ever heard of that subject.
It's an interesting scenario. It's interesting, yeah.
Probably a great class for a lot of people to start with, too. Yeah, sure. I don't know what the syllabus is, but it seems like a class that would round out some of your
He offers a class called
beliefs.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. No, offers a class called 149 in the spring, and I'd recommend you look into it. It's cross-listed under philosophy and environmental studies. It's very, very interesting.
It's basically the ethics beyond behind various manipulations of nature and how we should be looking at it as rather. I'm taking it next semester, so I'm not completely sure, but just looking at it as us being a part of it rather than us being completely separate. I mean, we'll look at the land as a resource to be exploited. How much money can we make off this? How much gas can we take off and then sell, rather than how can we live with this land? How can we live on top of this land for as long as possible, living with the earth in a sustainable fashion where we can just enjoy ourselves and make sure everything around us is enjoying itself as well.
Yeah, there's just one thing I want to clarify. The word sustainable has become such an uncomfortable term for me because it's taken on like this vastly...
The same way that the word green kind of...
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's a good point because, well, we were talking earlier about LEED certification and leadership in energy and efficiency design, something like that. I keep kind of fumbling through that acronym. But anyways, we were talking, I was just pointing out, because I have to read about that a lot for one of the blogs I write, and it's really sad to see these good ideas kind of watered down or mishandled or manipulated.
Well, one that was brought up was that there was a LEED certified building that was out in the middle of nowhere. It was a restaurant or something, you know, chain restaurant. And it's like, great, the building's efficient, but you can't get there except by driving. And, economically, it's not just, you know, helping the community. And
exactly. Right. It doesn't, there's no thought for social costs at all.
But they could advertise, oh, well, we're...
Of course.
We
and,
that.
I mean, I, as far as I'm concerned, like, a lot of electric cars are, I'm uncomfortable with them due to the intense mining that has to go into production and also disposal of these huge thousands of pounds of toxic batteries. I mean, all it does is give an excuse to continue down our current path of car culture. But it's a separate issue.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
I think this past weekend they viewed the Beyond the Motor City at the Binghamton High School.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to go to that. I had papers to write about forests.
We actually had a very good turnout.
Oh, that's great.
And I should say that the...
Was there a good conversation afterward?
There was a great conversation. We had a panel from all different areas, health, food, rural. We had transportation. We had some Cornell professors. You know, we had a really great panel. And we watched Beyond the Motor City, and Aaron Wolf, the director, was here.
That's
he also
great.
Did King Corn, which was just recently aired or shown on campus. It was a great turnout. I forgot how we got on.
Very
this.
Good.
But
well, we only have a few minutes left, so if I would love just to hear from you guys, you know, kind of what would you like to see people doing or participating, or if it's just a specific event or whatever.
And once again, also share how people can contact you.
Sure.
To get involved.
However you want to answer that.
Yeah, I mean, one thing people can do is get involved, get directly involved. Just throwing it out there, we have a meeting tomorrow. We meet every Friday at 2 o'clock in University Union 325.
325, yep.
Yep. So we're going to be there tomorrow. We're going to be planning, just planning the last details of Gasland and planning more events for the future, mostly on education, because that's really the direction we're trying to make, move this before we... That's the direction it needs to go. People need to know what this is about. They need to know that new studies are coming out every day. I mean, I think it was yesterday, Bob Howarth from... Bob Howarth from the from Cornell released a study about the life cycle of hydrofracking, and natural gas. People think, oh yeah, this is so much cleaner, but the entire life cycle, it ends up being a lot more destructive. Mm-hmm. From the extraction process to the billions of gallons of water that need to be shipped in to an area for hydrofracking. So for people to get involved, I mean, they can call their legislators, they can see what their legislators are talking about, make sure they actually get answers from their legislators on how they feel about hydrofracking. A lot of them, a lot of legislators say, oh, well, safe drilling, but it's not really, they won't go into it more than that. They'll just say safe drilling because it's a neutral term. We need to find out how these people really feel about these issues and vote accordingly.
Yeah, I was reading in the newspaper the other day. It was Pennsylvania is looking at, was it $70 million in subsidies towards the gas industries? is they're voting on it, or I forgot where it went, but it's heavily supported down in Pennsylvania, which was kind of interesting. Also, they were looking at candidates and how much money they were getting. I wish I could remember which candidate it was, but he gets. One of the guys gets $3,500 a day from gas industry for his campaign. Jeez. So yeah, these are important things that we need to be asking. I was kind of surprised there wasn't more in our newspaper. There's more in our newspaper about the Pennsylvania elections and where the money is than around here locally. Mm-hmm. So
we need to be focusing locally. We need to be pushing the fact that When our water is contaminated, it's going to be the local governments that are going to have to pay right. for it. It's going to be those people, and those are the people we
not
need
just
to
just pay for it, but also pay for the legal fees to fight the gas industry
sure.
who you're mm-hmm. trying to get pay for it, like
sure.
they're doing right now in Dimmick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're not doesn't
state,
look like they're doing too well.
It's tax dollars going to the legal fees. Mm-hmm.
Sure,
now.
It's tricky.
And so we need to be focused locally to make sure our legislators are in there and make sure we are in direct contact with them. So that they know that we can take a stand locally. In just sure. Binghamton alone, we can say, Binghamton needs to take a stand. We cannot put forward this risk. We cannot gamble to get a little bit of gas and gamble our water supply, gamble all this money.
One issue people haven't really been bringing up, because they're talking about, you know, generic impact statements. And what does that mean? That means they don't have to fill out a different form based on where they are. Like, pretty much as long as they're not in the New York City watershed or the Syracuse watershed, it's just one simple, like, one form for anywhere. And they don't take into account whether it's a hill, a forested area, farmland, or anything. And one thing I brought up when I was talking about the issue with some of my local representation was that there's really been no talk about the flooding issues that we already have here.
Sure.
I was around here when the campus flooded. This is a state school, so this actually applies to the whole state. State tax dollars, I'm sure, paid for the cleanup of the university, the Watson building, the whole first floor flooded, which is computer labs. So I'm sure that was really costly. But when we're talking about drilling in Vestal, we're including the hills, which are forested.
Sure.
And it's kind of common sense. This doesn't even get into whether or not it pollutes our water or how much water we're using. But if we clear-cut trees to drill, we're going to have worse flooding issues, which is something I wish they had thought of more when planning the parkway and covering over the wetlands with cement, which has also increased our flooding issues. Mm-hmm. But I think flooding issues is something that's very basic and really unarguable. I think it's pretty common sense that if you cut trees, you get floods.
I think there's just one other, the angle I've been taking lately, let's say the process is perfectly safe, which I'm pretty sure is not out there, but let's, even if you take that as a given, this entire area is going to be industrialized. It's going to be, there's going to be 24-hour truck traffic no matter what, and the entire, all the natural beauty of the place is going to be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not just a strictly environmental impact. There's a social component,
absolutely,
and economic component. Well, thanks guys for coming to be with us.
It's thank you guys.
About that time.
Time's up.
This has been Isaac and Dave of Binghamton Environmental. Mm-hmm. Definitely want to come to Monday's showing of Gasland,
November 1st, yep. 6 p.m. Free pizza.
You're
Anderson
interested
Center.
In following up.
6 p.m. Yeah. Anderson Center. Get a meal. Watch a great documentary about natural gas drilling.
Listen to the smartest people on the subject talk too.
Exactly. So you've been listening to Sustainable Binghamton Radio. We'll be here next week, same time.
Yeah, and I think we have Ben next week. Ben. From Binghamton.
Ben Giordano, of Binghamton Small Business and Binghamton Marketing, a local entrepreneur.
And a new partner on the Binghamton Regional Sustainability Coalition website,
all right,
which we'll be rolling out. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks
good
so
night.
Much. See you guys next week.